Good afternoon. My name is Frances F. Williams. They say I'm supposed to say my age, but let me say this. I'm Jewish. I don't tell my age because if I tell my age, the next day the Dybbuk will get me and I may not be here anymore. So I'm skipping that part. Today's date is March 12th, 2020. I am at New Mexico State University in beautiful Las Cruces, New Mexico. My interview partner is a very dear friend and just a great person, and that's Monica Kimball. And my relationship to her, we're big buds.
Okay, and I am Monica Kimball, and I am not afraid of the Dybbuk. I'm also Jewish, but I'm giving you my age, which is 75. Today's date is March 12th, 2020, and we are here at KRWG in rainy, believe it or not, Las Cruces. And I am interviewing my good friend, Frances Williams, in regards to her story of being a Navy wife. And I'm privileged today to be doing this interview. Okay, Frances, yes. Can we begin?
Sure.
I would like to, first of all, ask questions in regards to your life as a Navy wife. I was an Army wife, which was quite different because of the absences of the husbands of Navy wives. So if you could begin by telling us your story as it relates to your career as a wife of a Navy seaman.
Well, first of all, I would like to say, I want to tell you how I met my husband. Very interesting. I'm a girl from Brooklyn, New York. It was World War II, and we used to meet at the Astor Hotel in New York City, which is now the Marriott Hotel. And that's where we had our dates. Well, I had a date, and he stood me up. But two sailors came along, and they were both from the South. I'd never heard a Southern accent, one from Georgia, one from Mississippi. And so they were trying to pick me up. Well, I was pretty upset. My date didn't show up, so I started walking down the street, and they followed me, and I told a cop, these guys are bothering me. And he said, lady, there's a war going on. Take them in and get them sobered up. And that's how I met my husband. I should also tell you at the time, I was 13 years old, but I was very, very big for my age. I was very mature looking.
13?
I was also 13, yes.
Okay.
I don't usually tell people that. So
it's on record now.
Well, that's why I'm such a young great-grandmother. Anyway, so after that, I started seeing my husband, who was Oswald L. Williams. And he was a Navy man, and we married. When we married, I ran away from home to marry him, and I was 16 years old. And I ran away to Gulfport, Mississippi. I went into an entirely different culture. My husband was from rural Mississippi. His family were very rural Mississippians, and to my shock and surprise, although I was excited about it, they were moonshiners. But then that's a different story.
So that was a culture shock.
Culture is beyond belief. And plus, they had never seen anyone who was Jewish. And that there were some interesting times, but they were good times. So after that, we got married, and then I went down. And then, of course, after we had a honeymoon, which was very short, he took off and went back to sea, and he was a gunner's mate on the USS New York, and he had just come back from the North African theater where they were fighting the German army, which had Rommel was the general. After that, he went to England, and he was an LST driver, and he was on D-Day, he was in D-Day, and he drove the LST from England to the beaches of Normandy, dropped off the troops, and then took the wounded and the dead back to England. And he did that for several months. After all of that, he then got out of the Navy for a very short while, but then he found out he really couldn't make a living, so he went back in the Navy. And after he got back in the Navy, they did give him the same rate. He used to be a petty officer first class, and he became a seaman first class. But they did something wonderful. They sent him away to Millington, Tennessee, to give him an occupation. He was to be an electronic technician. There's no jobs for gunner's mates, I don't think, in the civilian sector. And so he was gone a year. But because he was only a seaman first class, we couldn't see each other. We couldn't live together. He went to Millington, Tennessee. I stayed in Mississippi with his family? Exactly.
And how did that all work out?
Well, you know, I have to say, my husband's family was very interesting, very uneducated, but I loved them all. He had five brothers and sisters. My mother-in-law was sixth grade education, a fifth generation Mississippian. We heard the words, you know, et cetera, wow, in the home. And I tried to educate that family. And I think in the end, it took pretty good. But we never had any discussion about her being Catholic and me being Jewish. Mm-hmm. And when I told my mother-in-law that I was going to raise my kids Jewish, she said, well, Jesus was a Jew, too.
Good for her.
Yeah. So after all of that, he came back from Millington, Tennessee, and then he was sent to sea again, and he was on the USS Macon, and it was in Norfolk, Virginia. And I did leave Mississippi to join him with the two little babies.
In Norfolk, Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Now, in Norfolk, Virginia, in spite of the fact that they made all their money from the Navy, it was a big Navy port, mm-hmm, they had signs on lawns that said, no dogs or sailors allowed. So we were not greeted very well. And my husband wasn't there maybe a month or so. He got orders to go to another ship. So we packed up the kids and we went there. And he got on this ship, and he was there not very long. I don't remember exactly how many months. But then he got orders to move again.
So and where did you stay then while he went on board this?
I stayed with
warship.
I stayed with my mother-in-law, but then when I went to Norfolk, I went to live with him. And then after he got transferred, I went to live in the city that I forgot, mm-hmm, and we had another household there. But because he wasn't there very long, and then he was in the general service of the Navy. But it was very interesting because then he got to be an Airedale. And an Airedale is someone who is in the Naval Air Force and serves on carriers usually. And he was in a V-2 squadron. So he then went on the USS Boxer, and he was in the Pacific. So he was gone. And while he was gone, I went back to Mississippi, and I was working then for the Air Force. And
as a civilian employee?
I was a civilian employee at Keesler Air Force Base. I also worked at Keesler Air Force Base as a civil servant, GS-1, typist.
Okay.
And my mother-in-law was helping me, you know, take care of the children. We lived with her, mm-hmm, and so forth. So that was something, you know, he came home maybe after 9 months at sea, and then the next thing would happen. You know, it was hard to getting acclimated again to each other. 9 months is a long time to be gone. The children, you know, didn't really know how quite to react to their dad. And, of course, I had been taking care of, I had my job, I was taking care of finances. I was
everything,
taking,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. The children.
Like a single mom.
I was just, that's exactly right. I was a single mom, and I had all the responsibilities. Now, when he just came back for 9 months, after 9 months, then he left again, and we had this up until he then got transferred to another carrier, and it was the USS Coral Sea. And we went, and I did not follow him. And again, there was this long separation, and where he, you know, I have to tell you about the sailors. They had a saying, a sailor has a girl, has a port there in every port, and has a port in every girl. I don't know if I should say that, but that's what the sailors used to say. And a lot of other things, too. There was a period of time that he got stationed in Atlantic City, New Jersey. And that's where I had an aunt and uncle there. So I was able to meet, to go there and be with him. And they got us a little apartment right near the beach and so forth. But he didn't stay there very long either.
How out of, I understand that Oswald was in the Navy for 24 years, right?
24 years.
Out of those years, how many years do you think you've actually spent together?
A lot. Not a lot.
not a lot in that time.
Because, you know, the worst is yet to come, too, about where he went.
Okay.
But anyway, we were in Atlantic City, and we had the beach. I wasn't working, so I could spend time with the children. But, you know, he was, you know, he tried to be a good father, but it was sort of strange. That's another thing. When they come home, and the children aren't used to him being there, mm-hmm. they get very, they don't know what to do, because he's giving them orders, I'm giving them counter orders, and they get a little mm-hmm. confused.
I could see where there's resentment on both sides. The children not accepting the father, who now drops in, and the father saying, I'm your father, I love you, I've supported you all this time, even though I've not been here. You know, so that could be a complicated
Being a Navy
time.
Wife was very complicated. The Navy's slogan was, if we wanted you to have a wife and children, we would have issued them with your sea bag. And that is exactly... Now, I think the Navy has gotten somewhat better today. And we had no services. Today, all of the services have family places you can go to when you're... You know, you're home, your husband is deployed, and you can go to these family centers, and they're a great help. Also, we didn't have communications. Our mm-hmm. communications was letters.
Right.
And, you know, if I write him, that I have to wait for his letters, then he had to wait. Sometimes they had to carry him out to the ship, so he may not get letters for a month.
Yeah.
And then he'd get a bunch of letters. But in the meantime, I'm home, trying to deal with the children, and they're growing up, and they're becoming teenagers, and that was not good.
No, that separation always must have had a tremendous impact on family life, which I think, looking at statistics, you see this tremendous divorce rate higher than the average, and alcoholism and abuse and all that sort
the
of
Navy.
Thing. Were you aware of that going on? Have you ever lived, like, in government housing, family housing?
I've never lived in government housing or family housing. However, I was aware of the Navy families and what they were, either for those who did follow their husbands, and they had to get housing. Sometimes they get housing in the marketplace. Sometimes they had housing that was on base, close to them, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the problems when you have separations, there's a great deal of domestic violence. And the Navy really had its share and then some. There's a great deal of divorce because of the separation, the committing of adultery by either side. And, of course, when your husband is at sea for 9 months or a year and they're pulling into ports... There was no question in my mind that I had...
What they are and are consisted of?
Yes. Going out, well, you know, the frequency of the bars. That's another thing. They hung around bars. They were mm-hmm. in the waterfront. And then the women that they meet there and so forth. So that was another
and
concern.
It can't have been easy for you either as a young, pretty woman to be alone that long and having temptation oftentimes stare you in the face, I would assume.
Well, I was, don't forget, I work for the Army, and yes, a lot of guys hit on me while my husband was gone, and they always said, we want to help you with your homework.
Oh, certainly.
Yes, mm-hmm. I said, I'm perfectly okay. I don't need homework. I got enough. Yeah. And I'm a workaholic anyway, so I was more focused on
that.
My job. I was more focused on my job than getting. But interestingly enough, there's a couple of his friends that hit on me. And one time, I even had my boss. I had a case of sexual harassment. But then you couldn't complain about sexual harassment. There was nobody to go to until the Supreme Court decision of Meritor versus Vinson, which did have guidelines about sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. But I actually had my boss visit me and tell me he wanted to take me out, and he was attracted because he was married. So, yes, you had that as well.
What about mental health? I remember in those days that airmen, soldiers, Marines, whomever, were certainly not allowed really to show if they had any psychological problems because that would be recorded on their record. There goes the next promotion and all of that. So it was all pushed under the table. And was that the case with the Navy as well, that you felt maybe Oswald could have used a little help sometimes, but it was a stigma attached to it and he didn't?
Well, I think at that time in his era, guys did not say, you know, how they felt, emotionally or otherwise. I think a lot of it was dealt with alcohol. The Navy was really bad about the use of alcohol. And so that was another issue.
And it was cheap, right? In class six stores,
yeah.
Booze and cigarettes, everything was cheap. So it sort of encouraged that.
Exactly.
Sort of behavior.
But, I mean, aboard ship, they could have alcohol, and they could drink aboard ship. I don't know if they were allowed to get drunk or anything, but basically when they hit a port, you know, they made up for lost time. And that was very disruptive because, especially when you're from two different parts of the world. You know, we have a culture issue here.
Right.
But I managed to fit in with Mississippi. I loved it. I love the alcohol. I didn't like the alcohol, but I liked the moonshiners. They
White
were exciting.
Lightning.
they were the they sold it.
Yeah.
And you know, the revenuers were always after them.
Yeah.
And so forth. So after we left Harlingen, and that was a very painful period. Because he was there in down in Texas, and he was in a squadron there, and basically, a lot of the sailors there were having problems too of adjusting, and you were right near Matamoros, and so some of the sailors would go over there. They get in trouble. They were AWOL, and of course, this impacted on their families. Who may not have been with him or who were with him. And it was just not a happy family situation. Not all, I mean, but there was a number of those issues. And I was talked to by the commanding officer of that V-2 squadron and saying, as a matter of fact, I went there because he called me and said something about I needed to be with my husband. Because, you know, he's lonely, and he felt that having his family there would be good. But the bad part is I had two teenage kids. I had to pull them out of school here in Las Cruces. They were miserable while they were there. We were there for like 7 months or so. They missed their friends. They didn't have the same contacts that they did. And all they did was go to school and come home. And so that was a very difficult time for them as well. So after that, when he went back, then he went back to sea, and I came back to Las Cruces, and I vowed I would never, ever leave again. I got a job. The way I got here is Oswald got stationed at White Sands Missile Range. That was the only real shore duty he had. He was here for 2 years. So that's how I got to Las Cruces.
What did he do at White Sands?
He was an electronic technician, and they have a Navy contingency out there. They have at that time, they had about 350 sailors and civilians, and they have a Navy headquarters and a commander. So he worked there, and then I got a job at White Sands Missile Range. And so that had worked out pretty well. And after he left, though, he went back to sea, and so here we were separated again. But the 2 years he was here, the kids were so happy to come back here. They made quite an adjustment. But then, before he got out of the Navy, he was sent to a school in Albuquerque, New Mexico, at Kirtland Air Force Base. And it was one of the first Navy schools for nuclear weapon systems. There were 12 people in that class, 12 guys, and six of them failed. So they were out. So that left six people left. After he finished that, he was then assigned to a ship called the USS Pine Island. That was kind of interesting. I could never find a record of the USS Pine Island. It was supposed to be a minesweeper, but
because it had nuclear materials on them?
Well, I never found out.
Interesting.
All I know is I have letters that said, from USS Pine Island, I researched Navy records. I couldn't find it. And then one day I came upon something that said it was a minesweeper, and then I said, nuclear weapons specialist. He was there 18 months. He was out to sea. He couldn't come home. There were these letters. I had, kids were growing up. They were, teenage kids can be difficult, and mine were to some degree. But anyway, we were used to, being on our own. Mm-hmm. He was supposed to come back to the States after 18 months, but his replacement got sick. So they were taking him off the ship, then they put him back on the ship. So he was gone another 18 months. That's 3 years. Wow. That's hard. But,
with no leave in between, that he would come home every 3 months or something like that? No?
We did not see him for all that time.
3 years?
For 3 years, he was not home.
Did you get combat pay for that?
No,
I didn't. You'd think they would compensate, for that length of time of a separation. I mean, that's almost cruel, unusual punishment to me.
Not only that, but the hardest, I dealt with it. I had the finances.
You did quite well.
Oh, yeah. Took care of the mortgage, made all the decisions about the children and the house and entertainment. And I was used to just going out by myself, mm-hmm. wherever I had to go, if I had a social obligation, et cetera. So I did that. But the hard part was when he came home for good. And that was...
Was that upon retirement? Was that meant that...
Yes.
Did that mean retiring?
Because
from the Navy?
After he came home, I think he went to Treasure Island, in California. He stayed there, and then I think he retired from Treasure Island in California. So, yes, that was very, very difficult. So what happened is he came home, and the children, I said, we had hours, we had rules, we had boundaries.
Sure.
My husband was from the South, so he was a little macho. And he started to want to take over. Mm-hmm. And I was already in charge and knew everything. So there was a lot of conflict there. That was not good.
Sure. Yeah.
I didn't divorce him. We were married for 62 years.
When he passed?
And he passed. Mm-hmm. But let me tell you, it was a very, very, very difficult time for both of us and for the children.
How old were the kids at that point? Do you remember when he retired?
Melvin, I think, was 17, and Cheryl was 15.
Oh, boy. So, yeah, yeah. I could see where that would be difficult for them all of a sudden accepting a man who says, you do this and you do that. And
well, one day, I told the kids, I said, I trust you. Tell me when you're going to be home. And, like, they tell me a time. And then my husband said one day to my son, well, I want you home at a different time. And my son came over to me. He said, who is that masked man? I said, that's your father. And he did get a job here. As a matter of fact, he worked here at the university for PSL. And he did pretty good. He retired from here, from PSL. But being in the home and having all of these differences. My husband was a great hunter. He loved to hunt. He loved guns. I hate guns. I'm one of those. I advocated against the NRA. He was a big member of the NRA.
Oh, dear.
Yes. He loved to hunt, and that was good. He actually, when he retired, he built the most beautiful cabin in the Gila Wilderness, and after a while, he spent a lot of time there. But it was very, very difficult for him and for me. And
did he miss the Navy? Did he miss being
he did.
Gone
he,
again in a month or two, whatever?
Well, he would have stayed in 30 years.
But what happened?
Well, I said enough is enough. Okay. Yeah. You know, I've carried the burden all these years already. I was used to it, but I thought he needed to come home and be with his children and his wife. And, of course, because of our differences, there were a lot of clashes, not good for the children to see all that and to hear all that. And then, of course, he liked to go out and drink with the boys. Used to have a place called Wagon Wheel here, and it was a very famous water hole in downtown Las Cruces. And, you know, he would come there, and then maybe I'd see him at 2 o'clock in the morning. And that wasn't very good. And we just had a lot of issues.
Was that one of those Rednecks, White Sox, and Blue Ribbon Beer places?
Not for Las Cruces. It was just a place that the Cowboys hung out, he hung out.
And he was comfortable there.
Oh, yeah.
With these men, because I'm thinking, you know, he's been with only men. In those days, there weren't women sailors, I don't think, right?
No, there were not women sailors.
And so he always being with men, and then all of a sudden retiring and being with the wife and not the fellows anymore, and that must have been difficult for him, too.
Well, also, I got the job as a civil rights officer for White Sands Missile Range. He's from Mississippi, fifth generation.
So did you knock heads in that regard as well?
No, we did. We really didn't.
He
didn't like it. I know that he didn't like it, but I liked it, and it's what I love to do. I mean, mm-hmm. even today I work, but he was not comfortable, and he used to listen to Rush Limbaugh, those guys.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, and we had some words about that. So, you know, we were on two different tracks. Mm-hmm. And because my job required that I travel a lot, he stayed home. And then the children were in college. And then I got a call from the Pentagon. I was a logistician one time in my career at White Sands for the Army. And so I got a call from the Pentagon one day, and they said they would like to know if I would go to Vietnam. And I said, is this a joke? And by that time, Oswald was home. And he said, no, you have a skill, and we're having trouble with the supply system and getting equipment out into the field and so forth. So I said, oh, I don't think so. So I hung up, and my husband said, who was that on the phone? And I said, oh, that was some guy. He called me. He wanted me to go to Vietnam. And he said the magic words. He said, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. And when he said that,
you said, I've got to go to Vietnam.
No, what I said was this. Let's see. You left me alone for many, many years as a sailor. You went all over the world. I have never been here except Gulfport, taking care of the kids, and here. So I think I'll go.
Good for you.
So I called the guy back up, and I said, I'm going. Well, the day I left, I said, as I walked out the door, I said, oh, what have I done? And so I got on a plane
and
to
went
Vietnam.
To Saigon.
And then when Tet hit, so I was there for Tet, he tried to call me, and he had to have his telephone. I mean, they took the telephone with all of the ham radio guys, and they pieced it into Ben
to it. So you could communicate.
Yeah, and then the boss, I hadn't been there because of Tet. We couldn't get into Long Bend. And my boss said to me, did you know that your husband's been trying to call you and he's worried? And the first thing he said, 4,000 miles away, every ham operator, get your ass on home. And I said, I can't get my ass on home.
So how long was that commitment? For how long were
Eight
you committed?
8.5 months.
8.5 months.
Yes,
to
and
Vietnam.
I worked at the hospital at night as a volunteer, and I was a logistician during the day. So I would like to, being a Navy wife.
Could I ask you just quickly? I know times have changed. Things are different now. It's much... Really, it is much easier for all military wives these days because of communication, you know, FaceTime, Zoom, all these things that, you know, we didn't have. But is this something that you think might still be worthwhile sharing with Navy, young Navy wives, or young, maybe not so young Navy wives who are in a very similar situation?
Well, even the Army guys, they get... You know, when I was in Vietnam, the Army guys were deployed for a year.
Right.
So they were separated
from
my
husband was gone for a year.
Exactly.
As well. Yeah.
And that was difficult. And I had dealt with a few of the men who were having difficulties with their wives back home and couldn't deal with it because their wives were telling me, you know, the kids are going crazy. The daughter is running around and blah, blah, blah. And I had a few incidences with some of the men who came to me, I mean, I was married.
To ask for your counsel?
And asked me, you know, and we talked about it, and it was very, very difficult for them, as well as the women they left behind. But of course...
Is it something you would do different, or that you would urge them to think about if they're in a similar situation as to what you would have done different looking back that they may benefit from your wisdom of all these years of having been a Navy wife?
Well, don't get married when you're 16 because you don't know who you are. And one day when I was 26, my husband said, you know, you've changed since we've been married. And I said, well, if not, I'd be mentally disabled. But anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the things I want to say, too, I go to a lot of functions. And I took our World War II vets to the World War II monument in Washington, D.C. 2 years ago. And the guys from World War II were getting up and talking about what they were doing in the war, World War II.
Mm-hmm.
What I noticed, we never talk about the women they left behind. And there isn't a lot done or spoken about or written about the women that are left behind who have as much, I mean, they have a lot on their shoulders. So I wrote a poem, and I'd like to read it.
That would be so nice. And I certainly would concur that there is a dearth of information and on how women soldiers, airmen, seamen are, what tasks that they have to tackle in life that normal, quote-unquote, women don't have to deal with, and even single moms that are under normal conditions don't have to deal with. It's a very different situation, and nobody's ever made any big deal out of that. It's always the focus is on the soldier, and that person may get killed if it's a war situation, But the women who carry that heavy load at home have really been very much ignored. So I'm really thrilled that you're doing this.
I want to make one more comment about Vietnam. The guys who were there, they did a printout on the computer of a naked woman, and it had 365 blocks in it. So every time it was time to go home, every day they filled in. And when it was all filled up, that was the time for them to go home. What a waste of computer time, really. So here is my poem. I called it The Warrior's Wife, a tribute. I have walked the path of warriors, though I am not a warrior. I have felt the pain of warriors, though I have not been wounded. I have cried the tears of warriors, though I have not held a fallen comrade who died during battle. I have heard the warrior's words, honor, loyalty, service, love of country and faith, and I embrace them. I have felt the warrior's loneliness, for I have suffered those desperate, lonely hours too. I have felt the warrior's fear and apprehension. My fear is not knowing what happened to my warrior. I have felt the grief of the warrior's family, never to return to the embrace of loved ones who waited patiently for them. I have walked the empty path where my warrior walked, but will walk no more. Fear of battle, fear of loss, waiting, wanting, not knowing, the joy of reunion and return. The path of the warriors leaves footsteps leading in many directions. The courage is the hallmark of the warrior, and for those he left behind to rejoice and grieve, joy and sorrow. The brand of the warrior on the living touched by their sacrifices. How to repay their gifts to us of liberty and freedom? Only with peace.
Oh, that's splendid. Thank you. Thank you. I think I would not be wrong in saying thank you for all the women whom that profile fits. And it's a wonderful piece of poetry, but it also in every aspect talks about the challenges, the tears, the love, the compassion, everything. I think it's just a most beautiful tribute, and I thank you so much, my friend.
Well, thank you for listening. I appreciate it. So I'm sure you have had the same problem as an Army wife when he went to Vietnam, especially. I know who that was. And I worked in the hospital at Vietnam. At night, after I worked all day as a logistician, I worked at the 24th Evac Hospital in Long Bend. And that was really something you can never forget. Because as they brought those young soldiers in, and you saw how they were cared for by the wounded, and, you know, they're young. Yeah. They're 18, they're 20, they're 24, even some of the older soldiers, but it was the...
And many of them don't want to talk about it. And, you know, in my case, it was an Agent Orange thing that ultimately killed my husband. He was 100% disabled from Vietnam through Agent Orange exposure, mm-hmm. flying around in helicopters with the IG team that flew around, yeah. And they were exposed to these things and so forth. So, yeah, there's a whole other story, but thank you.
Thank you.
It's so most interesting to hear a Navy wife's perspective.
Well, I hope things are better for the Navy wives today, because it sure wasn't a picnic for us in the olden days, in World War II and the Korean War, right. And all the wars that we yeah. get caught up in. And I'm still very much attached to the Army because, you know, we have a museum at White Sands Range mm-hmm. where we have a wonderful museum that's getting better. And we just gave the Army $1 million to expand the museum, and they're in the process of doing it.
Okay.
So.
All right. Thank you, Francis.